Dion there with his take on Nadine from Son of Skip James. 7:01 on a Saturday evening. It's Al B cutting out. Greg Jones is here with Gary Ault, radio DJ extraordinaire and guitar player extraordinaire. So you're going to hear some really cool stuff. Keep it tuned right here. I'll be hovering in the background for a while, and I'll throw one more song on before Greg gets up here. He has an entire list of questions to ask Gary about everything musical that he wants to know, and he knows that Gary has the appropriate answer for.
I know about the incident.
The incident. He'll tell you about that. Here's Deep Elm Blues, Jerry Garcia Band. We'll see you soon. It's WNTI.org, and it's Al B signing out.
Thank you.
WNTI.org. That was Jerry Garcia Band with Deep Ellum Blues. I'm Greg Jones. Our show's a great one. We're here till 9 o'clock with our guest in the studio, Gary Ault, WNTI legend, polymath, raconteur, author, singer, songwriter. What did I miss?
Am I on the air? What else did you miss? Diaper changer? I don't know.
Dude, great to have you on. I mean, yeah. I heard your name ever since I got involved here, and we've bumped into each other once or twice at parties, but I'm thrilled to have you in and hear some of your stories of the earlier days of NTI. The earlier days. Albie's going to hang around, so he'll be here in the conversation. So Gary's going to play some songs of us. You have unreleased stuff you want to do, or you have any? I know I have like 7 or 8 CDs here. Prolific publisher of music.
Yeah, there's one other I can throw in the mix. Okay. A little bit later.
All right, great. So you got your guitar here, and we're gonna have our pleasant and attractive videographer Patty is in the house, so she will be putting stuff up on Facebook a little bit later. So keep it right here. We'll be back in 60 seconds with Gary Ault.
The Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University, on Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Playing the Allman Brothers Band, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, and all the players that influenced them. So if you want to hear some killer blues, soul, and rock and roll, the Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
Hi, this is KDO, host of KDO Radio. Tune in Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. for a mix of alternative, including indie, ska, and punk. So join me Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. on WNCI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University.
What's up, guys? It's your girl, Patty, P-A-T-T-Y, and tune in every Friday, 3 to 5 p.m., to listen to me on Patty's World on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary. Tune in every Friday, 3 to 5 p.m., on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
Hi, this is Jolton Joe, host of The Eclectic Trainwreck. It's eclectic music from parts unknown. So join us for our musical adventure, Sundays from 7 to 9 a.m., only on WNTI.org, the voice of Centenary College.
WNTI.org. I'm Greg Jones. This is The Grapevine. We're here till 9 o'clock with Gary Ault, as we said. He's going to in the studio. He's going to play some songs, and we're going to psychoanalyze him and get some deep therapeutic insights. All right. Put your mic on. Where were you born?
Where was I born?
Lightning round.
Somewhere in the United States. I don't know. Brooklyn, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, something like 85% of the... population of U.S. can trace their roots to Brooklyn.
Note the evasive response. you went to high school in Brooklyn? Or
No. I was raised on Long Island.
Long Island.
We moved out there when I was 3. And Westbury, Long Island.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
When did you shift to New Jersey?
Probably mid-20s. We started having kids, one at a time, of course. So after the first one, I said we gotta find something. So I took a job in Wayne, New Jersey, and got a house pretty far north of there.
Like late '80s.
Yeah, about mid '80s, 86, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I bought my first house in Long Valley in 86. Uh-huh. So 88. So yeah.
Right around the same time.
Yeah. Actually, I worked on Route 15 in in Wayne around then.
Okay.
Place EWMA, or north of big environmental place. Anyway.
Okay.
Enough about me.
But enough about me. Let's talk about you. Do you like my shirt?
Can you see it?
Tell me about your WNTI career. How'd you get your hand in here? When did you start DJing here?
The short story, it happened in 2012, first of all. Mm-hmm. The short story is that I was volunteering as a phone answerer, you know, taking pledges during fundraisers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, for maybe a couple of years I was doing that. And then Mel Thiel more or less invited me in to do a show that I, an idea that I had for a show that for years. I never dreamed I would be a DJ, but I just thought I would like to see a show or hear a show that features the multitudinous music that Eric Clapton has made on other people's records.
Yeah.
In the studio and live. He's just, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody that's played on more people's records except maybe Hal Blaine and those guys, you know, that was their job.
Yeah.
But she said, yeah, sure, let's do it. So I came down and recorded it, and she played it on one of her Contour shows or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a part two. And then when, oh my goodness, I'm going to forget his name now. The things we said today, gentlemen. Anyway, Al's going to come up with it. But he was a great blues guy, and I can't remember his name.
Scott Acton.
When Scott Acton left the station, they wanted a replacement for the Beatles Hour. Mm. And apparently I was the first one they thought of. I have a hard time believing that, but... you know,
the 10th one they called, strangely, but yeah, according, you know, what they told you is
it's like, yeah, I'm looking for a date tonight, and you're the first one I thought of. So I did that, and then we renamed it the Cavern.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we changed it to Crossroads. That was, I'll tell you honestly, that was Spider's idea, which I thought was a great idea because mm-hmm. I was thinking it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really his idea to change it to Crossroads, which is like basically an Eric Clapton show,
sure.
And yeah, so I had a lot of fun. I did a lot of fill-ins for Spider and Mel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great time. I mean, it was really the central point of my week every week. Even when it was just the 1 hour Cavern show, it was what I looked forward to all week.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, it was just the greatest time.
It's kind of like a bookend to your life, you know. It's away from everything else.
Yeah.
It's your chance to shine with music.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and like I said, I'd never imagined being a DJ because I'm a musician primarily, you know, and playing other people's records. That's what I do at home, you know. Right. But I kind of felt like the audience was like in my living room, you mm-hmm. know. It was just like me and my friend Charlie or something when we were 16 years old, just spinning records for each other and just talking about it and say, "Hey, I want you to hear this. Get a load of this," you know.
And you have a great knowledge base of, especially Clapton, but music in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
It's true.
I try, you know. I mean, it's a big topic for me. I'm really interested in it, so, yeah.
So you're Not For Sale to Minors one. Is that off the Clapton theme somewhat, the CD?
No.
I see it was Clapton is God on the liner notes.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember why I did that.
The 80s were tough on everybody.
Yeah. I just get in these wise guy moods where I'm like, I just want to do something comical or something bizarre and just let people think about what it means. Even the title, Not For Sale to Minors, and the picture on the front.
Yep.
Some people are like, what kind of a stupid title is that? You got to be kidding me. But
the marketing team didn't come up with it.
No, but I was just trying to make a subtle point, and it's like, you don't have to get it. I don't really care. I'm not offended easily.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever, you know. So why the Clapton of God? I guess it's just because he's my biggest musical influence by far.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to get him in there somewhere. You know, even though there's only really one track on the album that I think really kind of pays homage to Clapton. I think it's on that album, God in a Box.
God in a Box.
Yeah, that's kind of a... Well, on that one, basically... Now you're going to have to play it. I was basically thinking about his early John Mayall period when he would... You know, that's when he started playing on other people's records as well, and he just would get this tone on the guitar that just would knock me out. And so that's what I was going for on that track.
Yeah, and my son's a blues guitar player, and I request every once in a while for him to learn something. And I think I requested something off Layla, and he's like, "No, nobody can do that but Clapton."
Yeah, yeah, you're not allowed.
You have to send me a six-figure check for equipment. I might be able to figure it out.
Right. Well, with him, it's not so much just the amplification and the guitar and the strings and the it's the way he plays. I mean, he's just got special fingers or something, you know, and his vibrato alone, I mean, especially in the early days, his vibrato alone would completely knock me out. I mean, to this day, if I'm listening to, I don't know, let's say Sitting on Top of the World from the Wheels of Fire, it stuns me every time. I'm just like, how in the world? I don't even get it, you know, and I've tried to imitate him.
Yeah.
You know, just like spending hours and hours and hours and trying to get that sound, and it's not possible.
Right.
You have to have his fingers, I guess.
So you've seen him a lot in concert?
I don't know how many times. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'll tell you, my favorite concert ever was at, I'm going to forget the name of the place. It's got a V in it, but it's something Plaza in New York City, downtown.
Irving Plaza.
Irving Plaza. Yeah, I always remember the V in the middle there. So anyway, Irving Plaza. Yeah, he played for like an audience of like maybe 400 people or something.
Wow.
Three nights in a row. And I was lucky I got tickets. And I was sitting, I could have sat right at his feet, but I didn't know where he was going to be. Mm. And it was off to the side. So I thought I'd rather be center, you know. So I sat like maybe 10 tables back. We actually had tables, you know. It was just, wow.
What kind of amps does he use?
He was probably using a Galleon Kruger at that point. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, he doesn't even really play out that much anymore, so I'm not really sure, but it was probably Galleon Kruger at that point. A little amp, you know.
Embarrassingly, I've never seen Clapton, but I've met him and talked to him twice.
Oh, really?
On the beach in Antigua.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was just like just us. And the one time he had Colin was the
40 Connor, year, yeah.
Connor, right? It was 5 months before.
Oh, my goodness.
Where he died. So wow. And he was civil. You know, I mean, I told the story here before, but we were on this beach, private beach, and a guy pulled up who I knew on a boat. From 1,000 miles away from St. Thomas, I knew the guy, and mm-hmm. he pulls up in his little, you know, yacht bum trust fund mm-hmm. thing, and he jumps out, and we're like, big reunion, amazing, you know, 1,000 miles in Nolan Hour. And so he goes, well, yeah, I'm looking out, and I'm like, is that Greg Jones? And he's sitting next to Eric Clapton, they're not even talking. The only other people on the beach were Clapton, his nanny, and his kid.
Wow.
And so I go, oh, introduce me. And he's like, nope.
Wow.
He's like, I don't maintain a relationship with the guy by dragging over Americans.
Yeah,
sat on
well,
the beach.
You know,
but I went over and he was civil. And, yeah. You know, and then he came up and a couple days later we were up at a reggae show and he came, big floppy hat, glasses, all by himself, scanned the place, came over and sat right next to me, uh-huh. on the coral wall, and hung out for like 20 minutes. Just tried to stay out of his face.
Wow. That's more than I've ever done. I mean,
because people have like not good interactions, I guess, with Clapton. He can be snarky, so I was like glad to get out of it without that being the anecdote.
But it's an interesting story. I listened to his bio a little while back, and just an amazing story, you know, from beginning to end. And, you know, Townsend put on the Rainbow concert
right.
when he came back after, I guess, he was in rehab. Mm-hmm. See, his dealer, I don't want to go into any details, but he wanted this, and his dealer said, oh yeah, but take this for free. And when he gave the thing to him for free, he got hooked on that, and that was a dealer's ploy, and that's when he went down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he took 2 years to come back, and that was the Rainbow concert with, you know, Stevie Winwood,
a bunch of people. Yeah,
yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That was good drug tip, Albie. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, he, you know, it took another year or something for him to finally, you know, actually get off of it with mm-hmm. this acupuncture kind of therapy. But unfortunately, he went right into alcohol addiction, which is almost worse in a way. I mean, and for like a long, long time, he was just, you know, I mean, he's real, real frank about it and honest about it in his book. You know, so.
Well, where I was in, so I'm in Antigua, was right at the foot of the hill from his crossroads.
The crossroads,
was,
right, the rehabilitation center,
like,
yeah.
Mick Jagger was there, too, at the time. But, yeah, I read the book at the same time I read the book by Patty.
Harrison Boyd, Clapton,
Harrison Boyd, right, yeah.
Smith, and Jones.
The woman that launched three of the top 100 love songs of all time or something
right.
like that.
Right.
Wonderful Tonight, right? Layla and
Something was about her.
Something the Way She Moves, yeah.
Yeah.
All three
yeah.
were about her. And they published at the same moment her book and Clapton's biography.
Really?
Which read like a telephone book compared to hers. Which was full of full of juice. So let's see. We have. We want to pull some music out of you as we go on here. Albie, how much longer are you going to be able to hang around?
I'm gonna hang for a little while. Can you play? Let's see. Play one live though. Can you do that?
I could. What should I play? I could play. Well, you know, there's this one.
If you don't mind, Greg. I mean, I love.
Well, guitar's not a prop. You bought it.
Yeah. This is one I fall back on all the time. So I don't know. But I don't think the audience has heard it before.
It's fun.
And actually, I wrote this for Clapton.
Good.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about that if you want.
Yeah.
And I submitted it to Russ Titelman at whatever the company he was with at that time. But, I'll just play it for you. It's called One Foot on the Road. Let's see.
Have still been playing guitar, I see
that. Yeah, a little bit. I try to keep the rust off. Thank you for the whistling, by the way. That was Al B on whistle on lips.
Your playing is, you always amaze me, but that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Acoustic guitar with no amp, that's beautiful.
Well, if I had a little more guts, I would actually, play a little. But you gotta get the bass note in there, and, I chicken out.
Yeah, I had to do kind of a play with the sound checks there, so... maybe if we love that one, you can do it at the end of the night and we'll get it clean.
Yeah, okay.
Start it in slow. So let's see. We're going to take a break here, and 10 minutes late. And we'll be back in 60 seconds with Gabrielle.
Hello, Centenary. My name is Gabrielle Lambie, and my Afternoon Sing It Loud show airs Fridays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Afternoon Sing It Loud is a show where great music is played, interviews happen, and loads of fun takes place. There is a variety of music I use on my show, from pop to rock to country. It's all there. I love using the CDs from the music library and incorporating them in my show every week. Whenever I have a guest, we talk about a lot of different topics. Radio rocks on WNTI, The Sound of Centenary.
Just on the ones and twos. It's DJ Dr. J.
Midnight to 3 a.m. on Sundays right here on WNTI.org.
I'm Lloyd Jones. Join me Friday night, 8 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday night, 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. inside the Global Mix on WNTI.org. Roots rock, reggae, R&B, gospel, soca, world music, and more. All inside the mix on WNTI.org. That's Friday night, 8 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday night, 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. All inside the mix on WNTI.org.
The Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University, on Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Playing the Allman Brothers Band, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and all the players that influenced them. So if you want to hear some killer blues, soul, and rock and roll, the Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
Fundraisers, what I remember.
Yeah, man.
Are we talking?
WNTI.org. Keeping it real with Gary Ault. We're back.
Here we
discussing
are.
Keeping it real. Let's see. So you were here from 2012.
Right.
With, and had a number of shows, right? As you went through.
Yeah.
There was a big turnover when the FM signal was sold off. Yeah, the world ended for a lot of the people in the in the group here. Albie was in the room, stayed.
We're still crying.
Albie's been here for over 5 years.
Five and a half, I think.
26. Technically correct. And so you went through to about 2000, what was it, 15, 16?
Probably. I try to remember the other events in my life. It was probably 2016. Actually, I think it was in 2016. I remember where I was when I heard the news from Spider when he called me.
Yeah.
I was way out on my way to Ohio, almost there. And he told me the news, you know. I said, wow, that's crazy. But I stuck with it until, you know, this other opportunity came along. And that turned out to not to be such an opportunity after all. And I, you know, that was it. I said, I guess I can go back. Like Trevor did, and mm-hmm. I forget who else, and then you joined, and you know, but I just thought it's probably time for me to take a break from it, you know. So,
well, I think, you know, to be introspective looking here, it went from it was sort of a brand WNTI to where now it's really a collection of shows, mm-hmm. and all over the place. I don't know what the lead on was back then, like doing valuation shows or politics or so there's a, it's kind of more of a siloed forum for you taking your own show and doing what you want, which is mm-hmm. what they want students to do. I get it.
Yeah.
But it would be great to have some of the old jocks come back and stay involved.
Well, I'll never say never, you know. Not now. I got too much else going on, but I'll, you know, someday.
It's a fun hobby.
Yeah.
When you did your shows, did you have acts live in the studio to play?
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember all of them. I mean, I had a whole bunch. I mean, I think one of my favorites was Alisa Jones. That was a lot of fun. I have mm-hmm. a good friend of mine named Mickey Freeman, who lives in Florida now, but she's a jazz singer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun. I don't know, Small Town Sheiks, just a whole bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Greg Cagno came in one time.
Yep,
and you know, I was certainly not the first to interview him. I think one of my favorites was Bobby Whitlock. He wasn't here, you know. I mean, he lived here for years, but he was well entrenched in Austin by now. And I was doing some kind of a, I don't know, anniversary of the release of All Things Must Pass or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I arranged for him to to do an interview on by telephone. I recorded it. And so some of the other, I there was a bunch of interviews I did by telephone. I mean, I did Marshall Crenshaw, just the whole
Bobby thing. Whitlock had a lot of great stories.
Yeah, his memory is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
One of my favorite ones, he's in a Rolls Royce with Keith Moon, and there's a briefcase full of money in the back seat, and Moon crashes the Rolls Royce, and it rolls over, but they're okay. Mm-hmm. And they crawl out, and Moon goes, I gotta go get the money. So he got to crawl back into the Rolls Royce and get the briefcase of money, and they got back on hitchhike down the road. Mm-hmm. he did say something about Clapton writing Bell Bottom Blues when they lived in France in a cat. Do you remember this story at all?
How they wrote it, you mean? Or?
Yeah, they wrote it together. They were living in some kind of a castle or something in France. Mm-hmm. And Clapton liked this French girl, but she spoke no English, and mm-hmm. Clapton spoke no French, and he was inspired with Bobby Whitlock to write Bell Bottom Blues from that somehow.
Yeah, the part of the story that I'm familiar with is it was just fairly recently, like I'm going to say in the last year or two, mm-hmm. that it was for years it was just credited to Clapton,
mm-hmm.
and all those other songs on the album were Clapton Whitlock,
right?
And Bobby called them up. And of course, they haven't really spoken a whole lot over the years since Derek and the Dominoes' demise. And he called them up and he said, Eric, if you remember, it was basically an Eric song first. And, Bobby came in with a couple of lines and this and that, helped him where he got stuck. And he said, Eric, you remember? I mean, this is where we were and this is what was mm-hmm. happening. And Eric's like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. He's well, so don't you think it's about time I got songwriting credit? He goes, yeah, you know what? I'm going to fix that. So he called his publishing company and had him fix it. So big victory. But you know what the reason for not crediting him originally
mm-hmm.
was? Supposedly the engineer, I think it was Glyn Johns, I forget who, but or maybe it was Tom Dowd, but I don't know what the engineer would have to do with this, so I'm not sure about this part of the story. Right. But they basically said if Bobby gets songwriting credit on that song, then he'll have an equal number of songs to Eric, and it's Eric's album.
Oh.
So they wanted Eric to have at least one more song or one more credit than Bobby. So it's like, holy mackerel.
Now, but they picked a big song.
Whitlock lived locally?
Yeah, he lived in California, I guess, right? Yeah.
If you go to my Facebook page right now, and like it, my cover photo is a painting by Bobby Whitlock
mm-hmm.
because his art is incredible. I mean, I am not like a big art stops me in my shoes type guy,
mm-hmm.
but he started doing painting a year ago next month, right? April, May. And he does these big canvases. He does one a day and puts them out, and they're amazing. They're, every time I put one up, I get them commented on.
Remember the show he did here at the theater over there?
The Whitney Chapel. I didn't see it. I never saw him when he was here, unfortunately.
He was amazing.
Yeah. But he basically rented Trevor's girlfriend's house.
That's right. That's in California.
And so Greg Lewis, I think, is the one that introduced the two of them, or what? I'm not sure about the story, but Trevor and he became really good friends,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I was able to contact Bobby. I said, Trevor, I'd love to interview Bobby. How do I do it? Does he have a management company? And Trevor said, let me just, I don't know, I'll message him on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I mean, within an hour, he was communicating with me.
That's great.
And
he was on Trevor's show last year.
Yeah, that's Coco when I. That's the last time I was here. He and Coco. It's just a coincidence. I don't think Trevor even had a show on the air yet. I'm not sure what the history of that was, but they became friends just because he was renting from Trevor's girlfriend at the time, who I don't even know who that was. And he's got some really interesting stories about Bobby. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I put up a comment a couple of weeks ago under one of his pictures, and I said, apropos of nothing, but this guy did the piano solo in Layla,
mm-hmm.
but if I met him, what I would be stammering about is his art.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, it is.
And wait. 3 minutes later, he returns a private message I had sent him like 6 weeks before.
Uh-huh.
Just like kismet. They couldn't have been connected.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you for your appreciation of my art. I'm like, whoa. But, I have the feeling he'll be back through with Trevor. They seem to be pretty tight.
Yeah, I mean, he did a tour. He and Coco did a tour where it was just the two of them and then whatever guitarist locally was, agreed to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he played B.B. King's Blues Club and Grill when it was still open. I think it's closed now. And Trevor and Betty Lou hung out with him. And I mean, every time he's near here, I mean, they always get together. So I spent some time with him down in Austin last year, uh-huh. the two of them, because they play the Saxon Pub, I think it's called, pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great. I mean, to think that Bobby Whitlock actually lived, like, in the Hackettstown area, I mean, it's, you know, like, why?
This is news to me, and I'm like a huge fan of the guy. I never knew that. So, yeah. I think I know where Betty. I think I know the house. Yeah, that cracks me up. Just the like penultimate, or what, often one of the greatest songs of all time, listed Layla, right?
Right.
The penultimate guitar prelude, I think they call it, or I don't know. That guy.
Yeah, yeah.
The title Layla was from some Indian. Yeah. Remember that story? What was the story?
Yeah, Layla. I believe it's pronounced Layla and Majnun.
Uh huh.
It was a story that he had been reading.
Right. Yeah. And some Indian folktale, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, Unrequited Love and yeah. Shepherd. Yeah. And, yeah, I remember that. No.
Yeah, but I mean, that Layla album, and actually the All Things Must Pass album, which are two of Bobby's biggest credits, mm-hmm. that and all the Delaney and Bonnie work he did. You know, people think, oh, wow, what a great album. It's Eric Clapton and Dwayne Allman on the same album. It's amazing. I said, well, yeah, that is great, but that's not what made it. I really don't think it's what made it. Mm-hmm. I really think what made that album was they were just, first of all, they were a great band, you know, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all these songs that were written by Bobby and Eric, with them singing together, Bobby's got this really strong bluesy voice, and Eric's got this... You know, that was like the first time he was really developing his voice, and he still sounded like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them together playing off each other.
Right. Worked.
I mean, that's what really made the album for me. It was just those great vocals and the great mm-hmm. songs they wrote together. The guitar is like, well, obviously it's important, but, yeah. you know. And that's, and Bobby would say that too. He, you know, I've said that to him. He goes, yeah, of course. I mean, because he's, you know, that's.
That reminds me of another story he told. He's, when he's doing All Things Must Pass, and they're mixing, he's so, My Sweet Lord. Mm-hmm. He said something to George that sounds like he's so fine.
Mm-hmm.
And George like, yeah, okay. Oh, and really? All those years later. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in Clapton's book, he says or they tell the story of he wrote Layla, then he invites Patty Boyd Harrison over and pours his heart out by playing the song. And then I guess at some point they tell George, and George is like, yeah, I'm good with it. I'm a Beatle. I'm going to land on my feet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I will be able to meet women. So, you know,
right, right.
You guys have something special. You know, play it out. And a hell of a song. So there you go. Mm-hmm. So what else, now that I hopefully have the mic's key, right, what would you also like to jump in and play for us here?
You can play on the guitar or on a CD. This is going to be a departure from what we were talking about, but I have a reason for wanting to play this, if you don't mind. It's it's a single, so you don't have to worry about what track it is. But
for those at home, Gary's handing me a CD over there.
Yeah, and this is like not what you would normally hear on the show. This is I call it like a torch song. It's like a Tony Bennett kind of a cabaret thing. But it's a song that I wrote, and a friend of mine named Lori Klein. It's actually in her name. It's available on, you know, on Amazon and all that stuff,
uh-huh.
Is singing. And we recorded it about a year ago with me on piano and two other guys, a bass player and a drummer. And there's a story behind it. Maybe I'll tell you that afterwards.
Good.
Okay.
There's one track on here, right?
Yeah.
All right.
So it's sort of a jazz piece, I guess you might say.
What's the title?
It's called Never Ending Always.
Give it a listen.
The days, the nights, my never-ending, always all day. Here in my arms I hold you, in my heart for never-ending, always I love you. Troubled weather, I will never leave you, I do. Trust in the man you've shown me, in my heart for innocent soul of a baby. All things are yes, never maybe. Though the world falls from you, I still believe in you. I'll ever be true. Careless hearts of wayward lovers fly. Oh, they fly. Mine will be here beside you in my heart for never ending always. I love you. My never-ending, always, all day. Here in my arms I hold you, in my heart for never-ending, always, I love you.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, so that was Lori Klein.
Lori Klein, right.
And title of the song was?
Never Ending Always. It's available as a single. Uh-huh. So you can, you know, go on Amazon or CD Baby or whatever like that. We recorded that about a year ago, and I've never done anything like this before. Basically, there's a book called Force of Will by Tan Swiftwater.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not his real name, but and it's a local story, and it's a true story. And I know pretty much, you know, all the characters and everything. The story is very close to me. And there's this one part in the book where the protagonist, named is Gil, remarries after all this just unbelievable amount of tumultuous stuff going on in his life. It just happened in one night, you know. Totally took him by surprise. He eventually remarries. And this is, again, it was a true story. At the wedding, his wife chose a Shania Twain song, which had a similar title, and I can't remember the name of it, like Always and Forever, or Forever and Always, whatever it is. It was like a little twist on things. And she actually sang that to him at the wedding, you know, like along with the record. And that was actually a really important part of the story, because it expressed some really key sentiments that were going on right at that point. So the permission was never granted by Shania Twain's people to reproduce the lyrics in the book, and I guess the author felt that was important to do. So I just wrote this song. I said, "Well, here, you know, what do you think?" And it fit actually perfectly. It was like the okay. Shania Twain song was like, you know, close by nature, but so we said, "Well, you know, let's make it a real song, and uh-huh. you can put the person's name in the book." You could say, "Hey, honey, could you sing that song to me again? You know, the one by Lori Klein,
right?
Never Ending Always." Like, okay, cool. So the lyrics are actually reproduced in the book, and I thought, well, it'd be great if it was a real song that you can actually go out and buy it
and
look up Lori Klein, mm-hmm. Never Ending Always. And that's so that's great. That's
inspired
what happened.
Idea. Inspired
yeah.
by.
Yeah.
Inspired by.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And she's got a great voice, too.
Yeah. She's actually an old high school friend of mine.
Really wild.
Very talented person. Mm-hmm. Really super talented. It took quite a while to find the person to sing it. I was asking a whole bunch of different people. And I was trying to find people that were a little more convenient geographically, you know. And she was not my first choice, but she was the best choice. because she was super enthusiastic about it, first of all. None of this, like, well, I don't know, I got to see if I have time, and, you know, all this nonsense. Like, if you don't like the song, just tell me, and we won't do it. Because unless you're really committed and you really believe in it, well, with Lori, I mean, it was like, she said, this is in my wheelhouse. This is unbelievable. I love it, you know. She's going around her house all day long singing it. I said, well, you can't get better than that, you know. And then when we actually recorded it, well, I'll just tell you a really quick story. I originally did a demo of it years ago with different lyrics, and it was more like, you know how it was kind of slow and sort of rubato, like it was sort of, you know, the tempo changes. The original recording was a little bit faster than that, and it was pretty much a steady beat.
Mm-hmm.
And recording it that way was just not going to happen, because clearly Lori is going to have to lead, because she's the singer, and this song is just all about the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
So she's clearly going to have to lead, and everybody's going to have to follow. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that when you're just, you know, playing it like double speed and all this kind of stuff? So the bass player said, I think it's got to be even slower, because we were playing it really slow already. And I said, I think you're crazy, but all right, let's try it. What the heck, you know? I'm not real proud about stuff like that. It's like not like, oh, this is my song.
Right.
You got a lot of nerve. Like, just shut the hell up and play the bass. So I said, all right, let's try it, you know? I mean, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That was the magic formula. We played it so
beautiful song.
We played it so slow, and she was just, you know, she's just deciding when everybody was going to come in, you know. I mean, I couldn't have been more pleased. It was probably the most fun I ever had recording anything. It was just a fantastic experience.
Yeah, it has a real 40s.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, feel.
You need to get that on the soundtrack of a movie, I think. That would work.
Yeah, that's cool. Maybe the book will be turned into a movie. What do you think? Force of Will by Tan Swiftwater coming on your screen.
Now, when you, so you were the driver behind recording that. You have, as I said, 8 CDs out since, 2002? Is that one?
Yeah, I think 2001 was the first time I produced one. It's not available anymore, but
And you play keyboards, you play drums. So when on your CDs, where did you do, like, what studios did you go to? Did you manage the whole process, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I discovered one day that the acoustics in my basement were actually pretty good, just by some miracle. I mean, I decided to put in, like, an acoustic tile ceiling just because it was, I didn't have to, you know, do all the, spackle and taping and spackling with the sheetrock. I just said, you know what, I'm just going to slap a ceiling up there. And then I put in carpet and you know, couches and all this kind of stuff. And there's all this deadening, all this baffling going on. And I had no idea. I actually created a really good situation. You know, so I got a drum set and, you know, got all the mics. And, you know, it was a work in progress. I mean, my first CD I did like that was... you know, I'm proud of it because I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back on it and listen to it, it's like, wow, there's some really bad mistakes. You know, really, really bad. That wasn't even available anymore. But it was popular. A lot of people bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot of techniques over the, you know, how to equalize your voice, because my voice isn't really that good. So I got to take the nasal stuff out. And, you know, there's ways of doing that. And but what I don't like about doing everything by myself. When I say everything by myself, I have used a violinist at times. There's one song that my son played drums on. Apart from that, I think it was probably all me except for the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, it's been a friend doing the vocals because I wanted a sound that was going to make sense with the song.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, it's all me. And what is really difficult about the whole process is trying to be that right brain artist kind of person. Like, you're just trying to lay down a guitar solo, but you're also the guy pressing the buttons.
Right. Yeah.
And it tends to, I don't know if it gets my left brain engaged. I'm not sure what the issue is, but I tend to just start. I mean, like, I'm just trying to play a G chord, and it'll come out like, you know, like, what the hell are you doing? And, I spent, like, hours at times just trying to get a basic rhythm track down. Mm-hmm. And then I'd play a guitar solo that I'd completely nail the first time, and I don't know why, but it's a pain in the neck. It's a lot better to... So with this song that you just played, we went into a professional studio in Glen Cove, Long Island, and there was a guy, you know... an engineer, and he did the mixing.
It
was just, I'm really happy with it. So, yeah.
What kind of electric guitar do you use?
I have a Paul Reed Smith. It just depends on what sound I'm going for. Mm-hmm. I have the Paul Reed Smith, which is sort of a bit of a Gibson kind of sound, maybe, depending upon how you have it configured. And that's my baby. But I also play a Stratocaster. I had a Les Paul for a while. I don't have it anymore, but No, this, I have a Telecaster I use for slide playing if I'm going to do slide, only because it's already set up that way, you know. I think I like the sound of the Fender Stratocasters because they got that nice single coil kind of ring. It's mm-hmm. like most blues you'll hear is the Strat.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily my favorite to play in terms of comfort. I think I like the PRS best, but, you know, the Paul Reed Smith. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break here for 60 seconds. We'll be back with Gary Alts. Keep it right here.
I'm Lloyd Jones. Join me Friday night, 8 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday night, 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. inside the Global Mix on WNTI.org. Roots rock, reggae, R&B, gospel, soca, world music, and more. All inside the mix on WNTI.org. That's Friday night, 8 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday night, 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. All inside the mix on WNTI.org.
The Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University. On Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Playing the Allman Brothers Band, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and all the players that influenced them. So if you want to hear some killer blues, soul, and rock and roll, the Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
This is Rick from Randolph, host of the Local Artist Spotlight, heard every Saturday night from 9 p.m. to 11 on WNTI.org. I play songs by local artists, take listener requests, interview local artists who might perform their own songs and favorite covers, and sometimes I drift from my charter and play stuff just because it's stuff that I like to hear. We hope that you'll listen to the Local Artist Spotlight every Saturday night from 9 p.m. to 11. I'm Rick from Randolph, and this is WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
I'm Clara, host of Clara's Mix. Come join me Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. to hear hits from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. There'll be everything from pop to rock to R&B and more. There's something for everyone at Clara's Mix on WNCI, the sound of Centenary. Come join me Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. to hear hits from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today.
WNTI.org. I'm Greg Jones. Our show's The Grapevine. We're here till 9 o'clock in the studio with WNTI alum DJ Gary Alt, raconteur, polymath, author, producer, keyboard player, musician, guitar player, drummer. What else?
Insurance salesman. What else? I play a little harmonica, a little bit of flute. That's about it. Just a tiny, tiny bit. I can play a C scale on the harmonica, and I actually had a recording that I wanted. I mean, on the flute, and I actually had a recording that I wanted a flute part, and then I realized, gee, I wrote this in E. That's got four sharps. Like, how the hell am I going to do this? So I said, you know what? If I just kind of transpose it, the recording to F, that's only got one flat. So all I have to do is learn one flat, and then I'll be good. So I did it. that does not qualify me as a flautist, though, or flautist, however you say it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to withhold opinion. I don't know. Flutist?
Flautist.
Is it?
Yep.
Just be careful how you say pianist.
Yeah. Just in the right crowd. how can people get to know more about you? I know you through your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. You have, as you said, a 7 or 8 CDs, maybe 7 out in the mix there. How can people... buy your CDs, and where are they available? Your website?
Yeah, well, I have a website, GaryAlt.com. Also, they're mainly for sale through CDBaby.com, which, you know, if you don't know that, you just have to go to CDBaby.com and just search around. And you can, you know, search for my name. You can search for a whole lot of people. And actually, there's some known artists that are on there that they don't have a record label, and, you know, they're releasing independently now. But anything CD Baby puts out is also available on Amazon, on, I don't even know, you know, all the streaming, like Spotify and mm-hmm. Rhapsody, and I don't even know which ones are hip nowadays. But so the easiest way to find my stuff, and as well as the book I mentioned before, is Amazon.
Right.
I really wish people wouldn't buy my stuff on Amazon, though, because I get, like, what, a half a penny or something?
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, it's a little more than that, but it's really pitiful. Whereas if you buy it from CD Baby, I get about half the money.
And there are scams out there where people put fake copies of stuff up.
Oh yeah,
and, one of our local guys got burned with it. Figured out somebody was hijacking his music, making similar art, putting it up on Amazon and selling yeah. themselves.
Well, I saw that on eBay. I think maybe it was Amazon. My stuff. Yeah. And I wrote to this guy, and you just reminded me of it. I forgot to follow up on it. I just wrote. I didn't say who I was. I just said, I'm just curious. How'd you get, you know? No answer. I don't know if there's a way to complain about that and get him kicked off or something, but.
Yeah, well, you'd think. And, you know, that points up one of the problems we talk about here a lot is that the business model of succeeding in music is has become so lottery ticket. Like, I've seen people just in here that are just fantastic musicians, and you know, you don't know who's going to break out. We had I told the story before. We had the guys from Railroad Earth playing in my backyard, 1989. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see that level of guys. They you know, caught lightning in a bottle and broke out. Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult now between just pirating, I guess, or inability to stop people from the free content of it, and that whole record model, record label signing thing. It just seems to me it's become like authors trying to sell a book. It seems like something that's going to pass quick. Right. Dinosaur part of it, because basically you're hiring PR.
Right.
It seems to me the distribution is not necessary anymore. The manufacturing is not necessary anymore. Which was what record labels were always really about.
Mm-hmm.
And so a record label is like a PR firm.
Right.
Which is what I do, PR. So that's why I'm interested in it.
Right.
But it's an interesting dynamic, you know, how it's evolving so quickly, but churning people up and churning up people's lives in it as it changes.
Yeah. And I just wonder if they've really got it figured out. Like, I don't know how. Like I just don't know how some people are even making it. I don't know how they're doing it. I mean, you've always got like Beyonce or whoever, the top whatever. But to say that you've got the number one song or number one album, like, I don't even know what that means. Does that mean 100 people bought it? I mean, you know, like 100 people bought, you know, Beyonce's news, or let's say Lady Gaga and Brad Cooper's latest song.
Right.
And one person bought my song, so I guess they beat me by 100, but okay. Obviously, those are ridiculous numbers, but I don't know how it's even working. I'm not sure why a lot of people are even doing it.
Well, and then the other piece of that is that I look at it and think, okay, well, the revenue is going to be touring. You know, I grew up a Deadhead. I got it. They couldn't do it in the studio. So, and people were selling their T-shirts for free on the song.
Yeah.
They weren't getting the T-shirt money, but they did 200 shows a year.
Right. That's where they made their money.
Yeah. And... but it's very difficult for independent musicians or the people that we see on here to make that jump and also support themselves and make a living and but at the same time commit to touring. So there's a step there that's it's frustrating. It's an inefficient market is the way I would.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to put it. Yeah. You know,
and it would be interesting to see how it sorts out. Personally, I'm an advocate of live music. That's what I'm kind of all about. Right. So I hate it when you see people that are worthy of it and I ask them what their, you know, tour schedule is or something, and they're like, oh, we got to book some gigs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People should be able to see you every month. So let's see. What do you want to jump into? I want to grab you while you have your guitar in your lap. So what would be another one you feel would fit here?
A CD, you mean?
Or, no, actually.
On the guitar?
Yeah.
Let's see. I don't know. This is another one I fall back on. It's called Crying Fire. It's on my tribute album, which is basically a 2-CD tribute to everybody. I mean, you know, you see tribute albums all the time, tribute to Stevie Wonder. And what it is that they're playing his songs. And that's, you know, that's a nice way to pay tribute. But I thought, you know what? I've got all these people that were influences on me, either as musicians or you know, writers or whatever, mm-hmm. that the best way I can think to pay tribute to them is to show how they influenced me. Mm-hmm. And that means writing my own song and playing my own song.
Yeah.
So I'll get this, I think it's like 31 different artists, whatever they, whether they're, you know, singers, musicians, or writers that, that I paid tribute to. Mm-hmm. And this one actually is to Jeffrey Gaines, who, you know, is not super well known, but probably one of my favorite singers, and I like the way he writes too. So this is called Crying Fire. Ready?